Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on this 26th of September 2016 as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. As always, call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to Instagram and follow me. Follow me on Instagram at Rillo Gerald Quinn. Go to itunes.apple.com and look up Cyril Gerald Quinn. Look up the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. A lot to do on this busy, busy Monday evening. Normally, of course, we would begin with the game of the week as far as the NFL goes, but we had one tragic event as we lost two prominent figures at different stages of their respective lives, and we'll begin there with the loss of one, Jose Fernandez, who shockingly was killed in a boating accident on early Sunday morning on Miami Beach, killed two others that were identified today as his 30-foot boat crashed into the rocks. He was killed by the and it came out today that he was killed on impact and not by drowning, because some details that came out on yesterday that he wasn't wearing a life vest, but would not have made a difference as he was killed on impact. And you know, you see a guy who was on his way to becoming one of the biggest stars in all of baseball, which probably was close to being already one of the biggest stars in all of baseball, was a young 24-year-old pitcher who had already, in his short 4-year career, had won already 38 games on a bad team. We know what his home record was. Finishes his lifetime career home record at 25-2 with a 29-2 with a 1.49 ERA. I couldn't believe it when I heard it Sunday morning. I was up doing some things, and I was in a complete shock. Anytime you see, any loss of life is one loss too many, but when you hear somebody, not even reach their prime or their pinnacle and 24 years old in any walk of life, sports, it doesn't matter. But, again, this guy, he was only his fourth year in the major leagues playing on a bad team and playing, a guy who had to go through a lot to get to the majors, defected from Cuba, and we all know, those waters are like shark infested waters. What people go through. I mean, people lose their, I don't think you realize people have lost their lives trying to defect from Cuba. It's 90 miles away. Cuba's of course 90 miles away from Florida, from South Florida, but trying to defect from Cuba, you're not caught by the army. Those are shark infested waters. So they, those guys, those athletes who defected from Cuba, they know the risk that they're taking when they make that trek from Cuba to Florida. And this guy was one of them. He was a hero amongst Cubans. It was talked about, every time he pitched, people talked about, the ratings and things of that nature in his homeland watching. And again, it's just something, it's again the polar opposite of what we saw with Arnold Palmer. Arnold Palmer is a guy who, again, one of the great golfers of all time, 87 years old, lived a full life. I mean, I think any of us would take 87 years on this earth. A guy who had made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, probably finished, his expected net worth was around $700 million. So, Arnold, again, you know, if you're close on, if you're close to Arnold Palmer, then you certainly are hurting today. But you know, you at least with Arnold Palmer, you can say, hey, this guy lived a full life, did everything, was beloved, got every inch of talent out of his, you know, out of his body, and just lived a complete life. Jose Fernandez, his life basically was just beginning. You know, this guy, he was going to become one of the highest paid players in Major League Baseball. One, again, was already one of the biggest stars in Major League Baseball. And again, something like, you know, you see guys in their prime, not in their prime, but you see guys like, I think of like a Len Bias, like just not knowing how great this, you know, this guy or this athlete could have been. You know, you lose a guy in their prime or in their, or before, you know, you see them at the peak of their powers. And, you know, again, it's just this, the Jose Fernandez caught me and caught a lot of people, caught everybody off guard. Arnold Palmer was sick. His health had been failing. So it was not as big a surprise, certainly not even come close to being as big a surprise as what transpired with a Jose Fernandez. The Miami Marlins, of course, had a press conference yesterday where the entire team was there. Only Martin Prado spoke. Don Mattingly spoke. You had the president spoke, the general manager spoke, but only Martin Prado of the players spoke at that press conference. Every player was there in uniform. Tonight, they're playing the Mets, and they're all wearing number 16 jersey, which I thought was a wonderful tribute to honor his memory, wearing the number 16 jersey. The Marlins will retire his jersey, which is, you know, rightfully so. And again, anybody dying, you know, you don't like that. You don't like it, part of life. But you know, anybody that passes away, certainly feel bad for the family and for the family and friends. But when you see again, you see somebody 24 years old, it takes on a different light, and it's just, you know, you just never know. You just absolutely never know. And certainly, our thoughts are with his family and with the family as well as of Arnold Palmer. I don't want to try to make this out to be like one death was more, you know, tragic than the other, but they died in different ways. I mean, one, Arnold Palmer, again, lived a full life, dying at 87. Jose Fernandez never, you know, Jose Fernandez was 24. As far as Arnold Palmer goes, again, we know what, you know, if you're a golf fan, if you're a fan of sports, Arnold Palmer, and if you're old enough, and I'm not old enough, but again, I've read enough and heard enough to understand that Arnold Palmer was one of the most beloved figures in all of sports, not just one of the most beloved golfers in all of sports, but one of the most beloved figures of all the sports. When you go 87 years on this earth, make as much money as Arnold Palmer made, have as much success as Arnold Palmer had, and no one, I never heard one person, media, family, anybody say one bad word about Arnold Palmer. Not one. I mean, everybody loved Arnold Palmer. And this was a guy who, again, over his career, made over $700 million in terms of endorsements. What he made on the golf course, doesn't even compare to what he made in terms of his businesses. He designed golf courses, had all kinds of businesses and endorsements and things of that nature, was as successful of a businessman that any athlete has ever been, to be honest with you. He was that successful, again, close to being a billionaire. But despite that, you know, that, you know, with success comes envy and jealousy and things of that nature. I had never heard anyone say a bad word about Arnold Palmer. Not one bad word. And again, to be on this earth for 87 years and not one person publicly say a bad word about you, that speaks to the kind of life that Arnold Palmer lived. Again, we know back in the day he had the Arnie's Army. There was not a more popular golfer that ever lived than Arnold Palmer. There may have been better golfers, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Bobby Jones, Gary Player, but there was not a more popular or beloved figure in the sport of golf than one Arnold Palmer, who again passed away from these heart complications from the heart at the age of 87. So, you know, you got the complete cycle of life or death in this case in less than 24 hours. The tragic loss of one Jose Fernandez at the age of 24 and a life fulfilled for one Arnold Palmer who passed away at the age of 87. 347-215-6180. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast, NFL Game of the Week, Washington Redskins, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. A quick message to a viewer who is watching live on Facebook. You saw me drunk. You saw me drink. It was not the brown. It was some Lipton ice, some Lipton warm hot tea. So it was not the brown. I'm live here on Facebook to my audience. I just want to send a message that it was not the brown. And person would know what I'm talking about when I said the brown. You definitely would know what I'm talking about. So I just want to just get that clarification. Your host is not drinking on the air. I'm doing this show completely 1,000% sober, drinking some iced tea hot tea. If you can keep that in mind, so I don't want to catch any flack from anybody. 347-215-6180 is a call number to my audience, to my listening audience from Blog Talk Radio, to my Facebook Live audience, Temple University. You see the hat, you see it in the flesh. We took care of business at homecoming. I think it was like 48-20, something like that. We won. So that's all that counts. Temple University win. So I had to represent with the black and white Temple Owl. Game of the week. The Washington Redskins take out the New York Giants 29-27. This was, in my eyes, a season-saving victory for the Washington Redskins. They could not afford to go 0-3 and be down three games in the division to both the Eagles and the Giants. You already heard a lot of barking in the locker room, complaining. This so-called players meeting that took place late last week, which is a bunch of garbage. I never buy into those players meetings. I don't understand what can be accomplished from them. Just much to do about it, nothing. But the Redskins got a much needed victory. And listen, it wasn't pretty. They still have a lot to work on. The run defense is still terrible. Had the Giants had the ball more, the Giants would have ran the ball for maybe 200 yards, but the Giants didn't have the ball that long, had the ball about 26 minutes. And the Giants didn't have all the turnovers that they had. They would have ran the ball more. But the thing that you loved about this victory, if you're a Washington fan, is the fact that the team was facing 0-3. They're down 14-3 at MetLife Stadium. And, you know, at that point, that game to me had 31-10 written all over it. Instead, you know, they fought back. They fought through injuries. They fought through mistakes. They fought through penalties. They fought through some spotty play calling. They fought through some things, a number of things, to get that win on the road and get them again a win that they absolutely had to have. The Redskins had to have that game in the worst way. I thought Cousins played well. No turnovers. Now, I don't blame what happened at the end of the half on Cousins. I blame that on Gruden. You've got to call a timeout. You have one timeout in your pocket. You got to use that timeout. Redskins should have had, no timeout. They would have had no timeouts for 18 seconds and enough time to get two plays off. Instead of waiting until 11 seconds to hold the timeout, to keep the timeout, and spiking the ball and basically only having, 11 seconds to do two plays. 18 seconds to two plays versus 11 seconds to do two plays. You much rather have 18 seconds with no timeouts than 11 seconds with only one timeout, in my eyes. So I thought the Redskins coaching staff, John Gruden, messed that up. I don't blame that on Cousins at all for them not being able to get any points out of that possession that would have made it 21-19. But again, even before that, the Redskins were in decent shape at 21-16. Jameson Crowder had a big day. I thought, you know, everybody will talk about the punt, the touchdown catch that went for 55 yards, which was a great play by him. That was a well-designed play. Get the coaching staff credit for that play, and the blocking down the field was tremendous. Trent Williams had a big block that basically knocked two people out of the way. But the play to me that turned that energized the Redskins and turned the entire game around to me was the Crowder punt return. Crowder let the ball bounce around, I would say, the 10 to 15 yard line. Basically, almost steps out of bounds and turns that into a 50-yard play. Turns that into a 50-yard punt return. You felt the energy, you know, that galvanized the team. And I'm not saying that there's no one single play that won the game for the Redskins, but that play to me turned the momentum of the game around in the first half. The Redskins were down in the game. You know, you already saw people, you know, Chris Baker going at it with Joe Barry on the sideline, so they were ready to get knocked out by the Giants. But again, Crowder had a big play. DeSean Jackson, who just kills the Giants no matter what uniform he's in, Eagles, Redskins, whoever, had a touchdown catch. He was not 100%, by the way. He was not moving well at all, but had a touchdown catch over about 56 yards. And again, the Redskins did what they had to do. Now, did they get some help from the Giants? Absolutely. The Giants played some of the dumbest football that you'll ever see. 7 penalties for 118 yards. Odell Beckham, who seems just to have this obsession with Josh Norman. Josh Norman gets in Odell Beckham's head. I mean, it's kind of like Reggie Miller or John Starks. I mean, it is amazing how Josh Norman gets in this guy's head, and he can't, like, he wants the ball so bad. He wants so bad to make Josh Norman look bad that he takes himself. And I'm talking about Odell Beckham. He takes himself out of the game. Now he had a nice game. He had 7 catches, 121 yards. Had made a great one hand catch down the sideline. And again, his talent is not to be questioned. The guy physically, might be the best outside Antonio Brown. He's probably the best receiver in football outside of Antonio Brown. But he psychs himself out repeatedly, especially against Antonio Brown, not Antonio Brown, especially against Josh Norman. I mean, it's unbelievable how this guy just, you know, he's on the sidelines crying. I mean, tears. And you can see the tears through the sweat. That's how, like, those are real tears on the sideline. And I'm like, you know, if he just played football, he would destroy Josh Norman. Josh Norman can't. Again, Josh Norman is a tremendous player, but, you know, Beckham, you're talking about an all-time great talent. I'm not saying he's all-time great right now, but you're talking about all-time great talent that Beckham has, but he just cannot get out of his own way. The Giants, again, had a rough day as far as the penalties and turnovers. Eli had a couple of interceptions. Could have had three or four more had the Redskins caught him. They continued to put the ball on the ground with the fumbles. Vereen had a fumble. But get the Redskins credit for running the football. Finally, the Redskins, after the first two games, only run the ball 29 times. They ran the ball 30 times, only for 90 yards, but that's not the point. I've mentioned that in past programs that it doesn't matter. The amount of yards gained don't matter. It's the carries. They got 30 carries. That wears another defense down. They kept the ball. Now, they did get a little conservative with the last possession they had the ball when 3rd and 3 and around the Giants 17. I think you have to throw the ball to try to score a touchdown. I don't think you can count on your defense stopping the Giants. But again, I turned out to be wrong about that because the Redskins would get a Sue Cravens interception about why Sue Cravens. But I did not like that play call. I thought they were a little conservative on that. But the bottom line is, the Redskins won't win the game, save their season, now are looking, you know, pretty good to even their record next week against the Cleveland Browns, who look like, frankly, maybe the worst team in the history of football. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Philly makes a statement, and Minnesota keeps on rolling. That's coming up and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Joaquin Sports Podcast, live on Facebook and Blog Talk Radio. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Saints Atlanta. I forgot this game was on. I mean, I'm not in this game. The primetime games this week, just, you know, a lot left to be desired. Dallas, Chicago, and Saints Atlanta tonight. Well, it is 14-14. Saints have just tied the game at 14-all. Should be a high-scoring game. Neither one of these teams plays any defense, so expect this game to be played in the 30s. Both quarterbacks are going to have big nights. Matt Ryan came into the game leading the league. I believe was number one rated quarterback in the league. You know what Drew Brees can do, so I expect this game to be a 38-35, whoever has the ball last type game. It's already 14-14 with about 10 minutes left in the second quarter. Dallas over Chicago, 31-17. Dallas improves to 2-1. Chicago, a banged-up Chicago team, falls to 0-3. They had, when Brian Hoyer's your quarterback, you're in serious trouble. And again, I love when people rip Jay Cutler, and then Jay Cutler gets hurt, and then you look at their offense, which can't move the ball 10 yards, and then all of a sudden Jay Cutler is great again. Like, and again, I'm not – listen, Jay Cutler is not a Hall of Fame player. Jay Cutler is a much better quarterback than people give him credit for. And again, when he gets hurt, you see how much they miss him when he gets hurt. That drop off cannot be replaced. Like, you're not going to replace Jay Cutler with a Brian Hoyer. So, Chicago falls 31-17. The Cowboy future was on full display last night. Ezekiel Elliott had a big game, 140 yards rushing on 30 carries. And, of course, Dak Prescott had another very good game. Again, he's just, he's going to be a star in this league. I mean, if the Cowboys don't screw him up, which is definitely possible, the Cowboys can screw a player up. But if they don't screw him up, that guy has a chance to be a star in this league. And I'm telling you right now, I would not bring back Tony Romo. The Cowboys are like 5-2 or – Romo's coming back 6 to 10 weeks. If they're like 6-3, something like that, and have a winning record in the playoffs, I'm not bringing them back with Prescott playing the way he's playing. I'm just going to be honest with you. We'll see what they we'll see how they handle that. But again, the Cowboys stars future was definitely on full display last night. Minnesota over Carolina 22-10. Minnesota improves to 3-0 on the season. Carolina falls to 1-2. Before you knock Carolina, remember, they've lost to two teams that are 6-0 between them, Denver and Minnesota. Minnesota, again, outside Denver, probably has the best defense in football right now. That defense is terrifying. They sacked Cam Newton 8 times, picked him off 3 times. How dominant was Minnesota's defense? They only had 211 yards of total offense. Remember, they have no running game without Adrian Peterson. They're probably going to get a running. They're probably going to pick a running back up off the scrap meet. To be honest with you, because they have no running game without Adrian Peterson. But they didn't need one. All they need, their defense was just all over Cam Newton. They just smothered him. Didn't give Carolina couldn't do anything. Again, turned them over 3 times, 8 sacks. Cam Newton was running for his life the entire game. And they've made the last 2 MVPs look like average players in Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton the last 2 weeks. That's how dominant this Minnesota defense has been the last 2 weeks. And I'm telling you right now, that team, I said last week, now they're going to have to get the offensive line settled to be able to run the ball. You can't tell Sam Bradford to throw the ball 30 or 40 times. You just can't depend on that. You have to keep him upright. They get the offensive line settled in. That team has a legit chance at going to the Super Bowl. That defense is that scary, without question. So they take out Carolina 22-10. Again, don't panic about Carolina. They've lost again to two top five teams in the league right now. Both teams with dominant defenses, and both teams playing at an extremely high level. Jets fall to Kansas City 24-3. Jets fall to 1-2. Kansas City improves to 2-1. The story of this game was Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing 6 interceptions. I know this is not hockey, but I've seen Hall of Fame goaltenders like Patrick Roy, or a guy like Martin Brodeur get pulled when they give up a bunch of goals. Because that sometimes it's just not your night. I mean, we're seeing some of the all-time great sluggers strike out 5 times. or four times. Sometimes it's just not your night. And I think that, you know, the Jets could have did their quarterback a favor and just say, hey, Ryan, you know what? After interception number five or interception number four, it's not your night. And at the end game, we're not benching you for the season. We're not benching you for week four. You're our quarterback for at least for this season. But I think for his own, you know, mental state that you take him out the game. I mean, how do you allow your quarterback to throw six interceptions? Now, if this is Tom Brady, that's one thing. If this is Aaron Rodgers, if this is a quarterback of that ilk, then you leave him in because those guys have, you know, those guys have short-term memories. They'll throw five interceptions in one game and come back with six touchdowns the next. You don't worry about those guys. Ryan Fitzpatrick, you worry about this carrying over into October. So, I mean, this could lead to a 2-3-game stretch. And, again, the Jets' schedule is brutal down the stretch. So we'll see what the Jets do moving forward. But this was a just terrible performance from the Jets. Kansas City improves to 24-3. No Jamal Charles. But no Jamal Charles, he might play next week. We'll see. They'll you know, take it easy with him because he's been brittle over the last couple of years with the injuries. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we come back, we'll have a little change of pace as the Mad Hatter is looking for a new job. We'll still talk about Power season finale. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Joaquin Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Joaquin Sports Podcast. We will get back to the NFL. Still got a couple games to go over and our top five teams, but I just want to spend a minute with the college football. Big wins for Wisconsin and Tennessee. Tennessee absolutely needed to beat Florida, especially in their own building. That game was 21-3. Tennessee looked dead, you know, dead as a doorknob, and they had a big second half. The quarterback had a big second half. The next thing you know, Florida, which always has a top defense, great secondary, couldn't stop Tennessee. I mean, Dobbs, you know, he looked like Peyton Manning back there throwing the ball in the second half. So that was a big win for Tennessee as they embark on a brutal stretch of games where they will have, as I look at their schedule here, Tennessee, they're going to be at Georgia, at Texas A&M and hosting Alabama in the next 3 weeks. So they absolutely had to have that game. Again, they're going to embark on the meat of their schedule and just a rough part of their schedule. But so far, they are still undefeated. And again, that was a big win psychologically. They hadn't beaten Florida since 2007, maybe even longer than that, but at least since 2007, 2006. Big win out for them. Wisconsin goes to Michigan State and has a big win. Wisconsin already beating LSU and Michigan State this year. So I believe Wisconsin will be at Michigan next week. So that'll be a top 10, top 8 matchup. Michigan ranked 4th, Wisconsin ranked 8th. But the big news out of college football that dominated college football weekend was the firing of one Les Miles, the LSU coach that, you know, for his career, we know had a tremendous record, won 14-34, won a national championship in the 2007 season. Yeah, 2007 season was, you know, again, one of the greatest coaches in the school's history, without a doubt. But here's what got him fired. And again, that game, you know, you can look at that game and say that game cost him his job. That he was fired long before that. He was fired. He actually was fired. He was dead. He was, you know, dead man walking. I mean, he was fired last year. They wanted to get rid of him last year, but for whatever reason, they kept him on. Probably should, you know, they were going to get rid of him after week 4 of the college football season. They probably should have fired him last year. But the thing that got him fired, you want to say he lacked, you know, his offensive schemes were archaic, that, you know, he just wanted to run the ball and play great defense, that in today's college football, you have to be able to throw a ball. You wouldn't be wrong with that assessment. But I'm looking at a couple of things that got fired, and they both connect with Alabama. When you are in the conference with Nick Saban, like that, you know, Nick Saban, you can't measure up to Nick Saban. You can't compare to Nick Saban. And it doesn't matter how many bowl games you go to, New Year's Day bowl games. It doesn't matter how many 10-win seasons, 11-win seasons you have. You're going to be compared to Nick Saban, no matter what. It's almost like, you know, LeBron gets unfairly compared to Michael Jordan. Like, there's no – you just can't be better than Nick Saban right now. You can't. And he got – and unfortunately, LSU was judged against Alabama unfairly, because LSU, as great as the program as LSU is and had been, they're not Alabama. Nobody in the SEC is Alabama. You know, Alabama is what, you know, what Kentucky basketball is to the SEC. That's what Alabama football is to the SEC, period. The second part is I'm going to go back to 2011. I already mentioned the one championship that Miles won with LSU. Should have been two. 2011, they go 13-1, 8-0 in the SEC, okay, which is unheard of now, going 8-0 in the SEC, going undefeated in the SEC. Even Alabama, who has had years where they won championships, where they have not gone undefeated in SEC play. That's how tough it is at this point. So they go undefeated that year, beat Alabama when Alabama was ranked number two, beat eight ranked teams. They had as impressive of a run that I've seen in recent memory in terms of the college football regular season, in terms of how many quality teams they beat. I mean, they beat everybody: Auburn, Florida, Georgia. Non-conference, they beat Oregon, West Virginia. Their schedule was a murderer's row schedule. It was ridiculous how hard that schedule was. So they get to the national championship game against Alabama, and unfairly had to play Alabama a second time, which you know, they play any other team at that year they beat them handily. Like that during that particular time, Alabama and LSU were like the top guns in college football. Like, nobody was touching those two programs at that particular time. There was like a 2-3 year run where it was those two programs and the rest of college football. It's just all there. That's all there is to it. They were on the level of Alabama during that particular time. Les Miles was beating Nick Saban during that particular time, matter of fact. After that game, after that loss to Alabama, the program in 21-0 in the national championship, the rematch, that program has not been the same since. Since 2014, they're 19-10. They have not finished in the top 10 since that 2011 season, where they finished number two behind Alabama. So Nick Saban indirectly is responsible for Les Miles not having a job right now, and the Alabama program in general. Like, there's no way to measure up with that program right now. Miles does want to get back into coaching. He'll get another job. The question is who will permanently have that job. I know they have Ed Oregon, who's just keeping the seat warm. Number one candidate has to be Todd Herman from Houston. Now, I don't believe that Jimbo Fisher will leave Florida State to go to LSU. And I'm going to tell you why. And I'm not saying that Florida State is a better job than LSU, because we can go back and forth and say, you know, with the recruiting base, you could say LSU is better. But with the recruiting base, I could say Florida State is better. I'll tell you this. If you're Jimbo Fisher, do you really want to be in the same conference taking on Nick Saban year in and year out right now? Do you really want to be in the same conference with Nick Saban? That's the question I would ask. And to me, it's much easier to navigate your way to a national championship in the ACC than it is the SEC. Now, again, the SEC has gotten stronger. Clemson is here to stay. Louisville's very good. You got some programs. Miami is on the rise. So the ACC right now is strong. It's still not the SEC from top to bottom. So I think Jimbo Fisher will – I think Florida State will give him a raise. I think he stays in Florida. Florida State goes toe-to-toe year in and year out with Alabama as far as these recruiting classes go. So it's not like he's not going to be able to – not like he can improve that much with the recruiting. But, again, that LSU job is a top 5 college football jobs without question. You would, if you recruit LSU just the state of Louisiana, you're going to be in the top 5 in terms of recruiting. They had, you know, their facilities top notch. They're in the SEC. They're on television all the time. That is a big time college football job, and I expect that the Houston coach will be offered that job and probably will take it. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll get back to the NFL and we'll still look back at the Power season finale that's coming up and much, much more in this latest edition of Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Atlanta's just scored 21-14. Again, this is going to be a track meet. They might even get into the 40s. I mean, these defenses are both of them are just horrible. I expect New Orleans to score before the half. It's going to come down to one of these games where it's like last quarterback they had the football. I'm telling you right now, both these quarterbacks are going over 350 yards passing. I guarantee you. Philadelphia had probably the most impressive win of the week, 34-3 over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Carson Wentz, you know, right, you could just give him the offensive rookie of the year award just right now. He's been that good, poised. You know, he makes tremendous throws, very poised quarterback. Seems to just have that intangible that you look for with a guy coming out of college. He's playing well right now. The Eagles are playing well overall defensively against a Pittsburgh offense that had been lighting everybody up. For the first couple of weeks. They hold them to 3 points. Wentz outplays Roethlisberger despite a big day from Antonio Brown. They shut Pittsburgh's running attack down. Le'Veon Bell will be back next week, though, so that's a great news if you're a Pittsburgh fan. And again, this was a shocker to me. One of the shockers of the day, well, a couple of them, this was one of them. 34-3, they dominate Pittsburgh and improve to 3-0. Pittsburgh falls to 2-1 on the season. The other impressive performance of the day had to be Denver. Denver against Cincinnati, 29-17. Denver on the road at Cincinnati. As they just, you know, that defense could just continues to dominate. And listen, Trevor Siemian had a big day out again, outplayed Andy Dalton. Denver defense knocked around Andy Dalton, held him about 206 yards with no touchdowns, held AJ Green in check. Again, I did not see this coming from the Denver Broncos. I did not think they would be this good. I didn't think their defense, it was possible that their defense could repeat what it did last year. And their defense almost looks as good, if not better than it was last year, to be honest with you. And they're doing it with a rookie quarterback. Siemian getting that a big day, over 300 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. Denver keeps rolling along. Buffalo gets a big win over Arizona, 33-18. Arizona falls to 1-2. Buffalo improves to 1-2, and just a disappointing performance for Arizona. If you're Arizona Cardinals fan, I mean, Arizona, they lose the game to New England at home. No Tom Brady. Okay, that was one thing. Field goal kicker misses a potential game winning kick to lose a home game opening Sunday night game. All right, you beat a Tampa Bay team that you should have been able to bully and run over, and then you come back to Buffalo. Buffalo in a week where the offensive coordinator gets fired, where the offensive coordinator gets fired. Even though I can make a case that Rob Ryan should have been fired, but we know that's not going to happen. You allow Buffalo to turn you over 5 times. Carson Palmer, who if not for Ryan Fitzpatrick, would have been worst, you know, would have got the dud of the week for quarterback. But you allowed him to turn you over. Arizona just comes out with a flat performance. Didn't come to play at all. Bruce Arians, if you're Bruce Arians, you had to just be scratching your head over that performance against a Buffalo team that just could not. And again, the Jets on that Thursday night game last week ran all over Buffalo. I mean, they did whatever they wanted. The Jets had almost 500 yards of total offense in Buffalo. And, you know, Arizona is supposed to have one of the best offenses in the league. They go out there and again, completely lay an egg. Just an ugly loss for the Arizona Cardinals. This was 17-0 before before the national anthem was done. 33-18, nice win for Buffalo. Bad loss for Arizona again. Carson Palmer 26 for 50 with 5 interceptions. Not one of his better days. Green Bay takes out Detroit 34-27. This game was over. In the first half, Green Bay jumped out 31-3. Rodgers had 4 touchdowns by halftime. It was not as close as the score indicated. I know Detroit had the ball late in the fourth quarter with a touchdown, but you never thought Detroit was ever going to win this game. Green Bay had a number of defensive starters out that included the likes of Morgan Burnett, Clay Matthews, and Sam Shields. And they desperately miss Sam Shields. Sam Shields is an underrated cornerback in this league. He's a legit number one quarterback and is a guy who's a borderline footballer. They miss him in the worst way. So that defense is going to struggle with the pass attack against the pass until he comes back. But Green Bay improves to 2-1 on the season. Detroit falls to 1-2. Matthew Stafford and Marvin Jones had big days, but it wasn't enough as Green Bay got a division win 34-27. Seattle over San Francisco 37-18. San Francisco falls to 1-2. Seattle improves to 3-2-1. Story of this game had to be, to me, the fact that Russell Wilson played. And not only did he play, he played in the second half after getting knocked around in the first half. First of all, I wouldn't have played Russell Wilson in this game after what transpired last week against the Rams where he took a beating. You know, his ankle was banged up. He would have sat. I mean, he just would have sat at the first, and you know, to keep him in the game when this game was over at 14-0 in the first half, the first quarter. San Francisco was down as much as 24-3. They had no chance to win this game. I mean, zero chance to win this game. None. This game wasn't even as close as the score indicated. So, and to me, it made zero sense to keep him in this game. They kept him in this game 5 minutes into the third quarter. He didn't leave till the 10-minute mark of the third quarter, which, again, it made no sense. If you're Pete Carroll, you have to get your franchise quarterback off the field. Especially with the offensive line that's shaky, to say the least. The one thing San Francisco can do, they can get to the passer, get to the quarterback. That defensive line is still pretty good. Not what it once was, but it's still decent. So that's the story of this game. Russell Wilson's health moving forward. We'll see, if he plays next week. But again, it continues on a theme of just a ton of injuries in the NFL. It'd be really going to become an award attrition. We saw the Redskins lose, two offensive linemen, and Breshawn Breedley and also D'Angelo Williams to D'Angelo Hall for the season. So that's been a running theme of this NFL season. How many guys are getting hurt? And I'm talking big names that are getting hurt left and right on these particular teams. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk about the Power Season 3 finale, that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Four 7 2 1 5 6 1 8 0 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. I'm just giving you a spoiler alert right here and right now. If you have not seen the Power Season 3 finale, then it's probably not a good idea to continue listening to the program. As much as I love you, and as much as I'm sure you love to listen to the program, probably not a good idea if you have not, if you don't want the season three finale spoiled. I was not in love with the finale. I thought, you know, first of all, the idea that Greg just turns into just an idiot all of a sudden. I mean, you know, to give away the fact that you realize that Mike was the mole, that storyline was suspect to begin with. I'm like, how are these guys professional law enforcement, FBI, and not figure out nobody over the last season and a half suspected that Mike could be the mole. Like, I just find that impossible to believe. These cops are supposed to have some type of level of intelligence and be sophisticated cops in the FBI and, you know, assistant district attorneys, wherever, you know, they had no clue whatsoever that Mike was the mole. And Greg finally figures it out, and he allows Mike to, you know, instead of leading Mike along with telling him that, you know, that's Angela, and busting him later on, he reveals to Mike that, yeah, I know you're the mole, no gun in your hand, and he gets shot. Like, I mean, come on, man. Like, you gotta be smart. Greg, like, the character Greg was smarter than that. Like, Greg was, you know, you could say what you want about Greg. He was, you know, obsessed over Angela and jealous of Ghost. You can say what you want. He wasn't no dummy. So I thought that it just made that part that they had a little trouble with. Also, the idea that you're going to arrest Ghost in his own club with circumstantial evidence. I mean, please. Come on. Like, you have prints in, you know, you have prints in the data department. You don't have prints on the gun. Come on. Like, that case is going to fold. What's the point? It serves no purpose for him to go to jail at this point in time. I mean, what are you going to do him like Avon Barksdale, keep him in jail for a season and have Tommy be stringing a bell? I mean, he'll be out in jail. He'll be out of jail after episode one of next season. Like, they have nothing to keep him in jail on. Nothing. You had him having fingerprints in Greg's apartment on his window. So that was weak. We've gone over to Kanan storyline. I thought Kanan should have been gone after last season. I mean, now it's getting to a point to where, because 50 Cent is the executive producer, they're gonna go 5 seasons. 50 Cent is gonna be on the host. It's gonna be on the show for 5 seasons. So I'm telling you right now, like, if you don't like Kanan, you're gonna see him for 2 more seasons. So now, you know, you're bringing, you know, 50 Cent with his cousin and her crew. You know, kidnapping, you know, come on, kidnapping Tyree for ransom. Come on, that's, you know, that storyline to me had no juice to it. We still haven't heard about what happened with, with Lala. She's probably alive, so I'm going to assume that she's alive. And, you know, why they would hold you in suspense over a character that really doesn't mean nothing on the show. I mean, nobody cares about Lala's character on the show. She doesn't have a big... It doesn't have a big part. If they killed her, they killed her. It would not be a big deal to take her character off the program. So I don't know why they're treating her like, you know, who shot JR here. So, again, overall, I'm disappointed by the last quarter of the season. You know, the first 7 episodes were strong. I think season two was much better all around from start to finish. Thought season two was much better. And, you know, I think the writing is starting to get to a point to where it's getting Empire-like in terms of they're serving great writing, great television, serves story over character. They're starting to serve character over story. And it's starting to get a little, you know, soap opera-ish and a little, you know, we're not, you know, we love these characters. We can't take this particular character off. Starting to go in that direction with the show. Hopefully season four, they kind of change that. But I'm afraid that once they got so popular with the ratings and with getting renewed for seasons 4 and 5, it's kind of like, you know, I'm not going to say Kemp is writing for the audience, but you get a sense that she's writing for these characters instead of writing for, you know, for the story. So we'll see what happens with season 4. Again, I'll be watching. You know, I'm not going to sit in line and say I won't be watching. I'll be watching. They did give a little sneak peek for season 4 with the whole, with Ghost being locked up and, you know, not receiving Tasha's texts and phone calls from, you know, when he saw the, you know, seeing, got the, when she got the text from 50 Cent with Tyreek. again, those two characters I could care less about that got some storylines with Tyreek and Lala. Those are characters that I just don't care about those characters. And I'll be honest with you. And those subplots and those storylines just took up too much time, especially the Tyreek subplot. I just didn't care about it. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, A Legend Lost and Gone Too Soon. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this edition of the Sergio Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. And, of course, we began the program with the tragic loss of one Jose Fernandez and the loss, but more like the celebration of the life of one Arnold Palmer, who passed away at 87. Fernandez, of course, was killed in a boating accident in the Miami waters. 30-foot boat crashed into some rocks. He was killed on impact, not because of a drowning, along with two other people. Again, it was just devastating news to hear somebody that young passing away that early, right when he had already came into his own as one of the great pitchers in all of baseball. He was a hero in this community. This guy had defected from Cuba to Miami. Again, one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. This guy was going to be, had a chance to be one of the all-time greats without question. He had already established himself with a 29-2 home record, 1.49 ERA, 38-17 for his career on a bad baseball team. I mean, Miami has been, despite some of the talent that they've had, and I know this year they played better than past years, but for the most part, the team has not been good, but he along with Giancarlo Stanton, a shining star within that franchise. And again, 24 years old, and he was going to be one of the biggest stars in all of baseball without question. This guy was electric. Matter of fact, the last game he pitched came, ironically, against the Washington Nationals, the 20th, last week. He pitched a gem against the Nationals, 12 strikeouts, and they won. I think they won the game like 1-0. It was the last game that he pitched against the Nationals, and he pitched great. He passes away, tragically, at the age of 24. Also, on the same day, less than 24 hours later, you lose Arnold Palmer, one of the most beloved golfers and sporting figures ever. Seven-time major winner, won between 58 and 64, won all his majors, had a John McEnroe-type career in terms of he won all his majors in a short period of time, between 1958 and 1964. Again, Arnie's Army. He was as great as he was on the golf course, he was even more successful in terms of business, in terms of his businesses. The guy, this was a guy that was worth anywhere from upwards to $700 million, had, designed courses all over the country. One of the most beloved golfers and sporting figures in the world without question. So Arnold Palmer, Jose Fernandez, two athletes who were at the opposite ends in terms of, one gone too soon and the other one lived a full life and died, passing away at the age of 87, all happened again the same day. I mean, it was eerie that for those two to pass away the same day. Different backgrounds, different cultures, different sports, And, you know, again, one, we saw him, you know, live out a full life and just accomplish everything. And Jose Fernandez, we'll never know how great of a pitcher he could have been. He was a guy, Jose Fernandez was a guy that was going to be one of the highest paid players in all of baseball. I mean, this guy had a $300 million contract waiting for him without question. Was going to be scheduled to be a free agent in 2019. Was again only 24 years old, and finishes his career 38-17 for the Miami Marlins. The Marlins had a celebration as far as honoring him by wearing his number tonight. All of them wore number 16. You saw the press conference yesterday. Only one player spoke at the press conference yesterday. That was Martín Prado. Manley spoke. The president spoke. The president, general manager, spoke. So it was just one of those things that you hate to see a young athlete in his prime, or a young athlete in general, going far too soon. 347-215-6180. 27-14. Atlanta just scored 28-14. So again, New Orleans has no defense. Matt Ryan having another big night, having another big game. Again, I expect to, the scoring is not going to stop in this game. 28 seconds left in the second period. 28-14 Atlanta over New Orleans, as Atlanta tries to improve to 2-1 on the season. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Girocuin Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. NFL, again, you had a number of injuries. You have to be concerned all around the league moving forward with all these injuries. We haven't had any major quarterbacks of big time teams go down. Cutler, and not to dismiss Jay Cutler, but these injuries are starting to pile up. And again, if you're in the NFL, it's something that I certainly would be concerned about, because it's not just, injuries are part of football. We understand this, but these injuries are coming at such an alarming rate and so early in the season. And again, that's why, everybody complains about hits on the quarterback and the game is soft. If you don't protect the quarterback, you don't have a league. So anytime you see a roughing the passer, or you see a guy get called for going low on the quarterback, remember, you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a lead. So keep that in mind moving forward as these games go along. Also, don't get caught up in the ratings going down for week three. It's still, the NFL doesn't really get kick started until October. So don't, when the game, and especially when you get to the division, when you get some of these interconference matchups, so don't read too much into the ratings. There's still a lot of people, and don't feel sorry for the NFL. They're still making money. They still basically can print their own money. My top five teams for the week: I have New England at number one, Denver at number two, Minnesota at number three, the Eagles at number four, and Green Bay at number five. So that's my top five. That's my top five teams of the week. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Girocuin Sports Podcast. As always, you can catch the replay at www.blogtalkradio.com/CyrilGirocuin. Go to apples.itunes.com and look up Cyril Girocuin Sports Podcast. Thanks to my Facebook Live audience. We lost our connection there late, so if you wonder about that, on the majority of the time. So thanks for checking me out live. Catch me next time on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sporting Podcast, Sports Podcast. I'll see you next time.